Hello, everybody. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist. I'm your host, Reed Coverdale, and this is the first show that I've put out this week. Actually, I've been all over the place on other shows, but this is my first episode that I'm airing, and I'm very happy to have my friend Shane Hazel on the other end. How you doing, Shane?
Ron Swanson, it's good to be back with you, brother.
Yeah, I was just on Shane's show on Tuesday, and we had a great talk. Make sure you guys go check out his channel. I've got it linked in the description. But I've been a big fan of this guy for almost a year, probably like 9 or 10 months. He was one of the few candidates we had that really brought the fire. And he was caught up in a very interesting situation in Georgia that we'll definitely get into later on in the video. But Shane, we were talking about it a little bit on your show. You and I both have the same background as far as being neocons and then coming to liberty. So why don't you just give us a quick story about how you came to liberty from being a neocon?
Yeah, I really got screwed, man. So whole indoctrination process. On my second tour in Iraq, it was 2004. We had really just got done with the major operations of terrible, you know, ness of the MIC of basically almost wiping the city off the map. And I was laying in my bed in a tent, and I was reading John Taylor Gatto, the great, I don't know if you call him a teacher, but this guy, he changed a lot. He changed my life right then and there. He was a 30-year veteran of the New York school system. And that guy, he just laid it out, basically, listen, this is a whole Prussian backstory and network. And what we're trying to do is create good little people out there to, you know, turn the cogs and all that kind of stuff. And when a crisis arises for the state and the aristocratic combination, man, we'll send them off to war because they're stupid and they don't understand that, you know, all this stuff is for, you know, some very rich people and their power and not freedom or anything else. And so, man, I had that revelation in the middle of, well, I should say towards the end of my last tour over there. And I was just, man, you want to talk about just getting kicked in the nuts, man. It was like all the red, white, and blue and shininess, I kind of had faded a long time ago of, you know, being a Marine, being in special operations, all that shit. But like, it was one of those things where now I got, you know, 3-4 months left in a very hot, like Iraq. I mean, like, kinetically hot. And boy, it's different when you're the point man and you're kicking in doors and going in to get, you know, quote unquote bad guys. After reading that kind of shit, you're just like, oh, this is bullshit, man. Like, this, I can't get out of here fast enough. So yeah. That was the start of it, I should say. That was kind of the awakening. And then I think, like everybody else, you know, you get that scratch and you just keep digging at it and digging at it until you get to the point where, you know, what do they say that the time frame is from minarchist to anarchist is about 3.5 weeks, right? Well, I'm a knuckle dragging crayon eater, so it took me a little bit longer, but you know, here I am.
Yeah, I guess I'm a knuckle dragging crayon eater too, because it took me a while to get there.
I gotta tell you, man. Jobs.
Yeah, well, I gotta tell you, man. When I hear stories of veterans having war really change their lives, it strikes a lot deeper. Because for me, it was kind of dumb hypothetical stuff and working and seeing how central planning didn't work, and then it all comes together. But it's really deep when you hear someone who's over there in the shit, and then they realize the bigger picture of how they're just a pawn for some oligarchs. That really hits deep.
Well, it means you didn't screw up as bad as I did. as bought in.
I was, though, man. Believe it or not, in 2011, so the year before I graduated. Sorry if I'm making you feel old, but
nah, man, I feel old anyway. So
in 2011, I was dead set on joining the Marines. I took the sample ASVAB test. I'd been talking with the recruiters. My parents really, really didn't want me to go. And so they finally convinced me to go into the academy and become a police officer instead. So not much better. In 2012, when I graduated, I had been accepted to New Hampshire Technical Institute for a degree in criminal justice reform. I had scholarships and everything. I was all set to head that way. And then 2 weeks before I was supposed to go, I just called and said, nah, I don't want to go anymore. And then I just went into the workforce instead. But I often look back at that and think like, wow. You know, because I think we are mostly a product of our surroundings. And I wonder how different I would be if I had gone into the Marines or the police force now. You know, I'm sure I'd be a completely different person, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, it's a story I don't tell very often, but it's one of those where even after I got out, you know, I was still throwing off a lot of the indoctrination, right? Like the Marine Corps wasn't for me. And I thought maybe the FBI would be a good place, right? And I hadn't done all the research. And I'll tell you what, I was actually trying to get into their HRT, their hostage rescue team, right? Like it's where a lot of guys from, you know, special operations will go after they're done. And you know, thank God I failed a polygraph and did some drugs when I was younger, right? Because like I would have probably ended up over there. And they were like, nah, man, you popped on your polygraph. Oh, and by the way, for anybody that's listening that's ever got to take a polygraph, it's not a lie detector test. It's a guilt detector test. So if you're not Catholic, you're probably going to do all right. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. So after you got out the military, how'd you get into politics? What attracted you to that? You know, it seems like that's almost as bad as being in a war zone, especially if you're like you being in politics.
I'll tell you what, you're around a lot better people in a war zone than you are in politics. That's for fucking sure. Like, goddamn, politics is the grossest, dirtiest, nastiest, most backstabbing, limp-wristed, jellyfish, nutless kind of goddamn profession there ever was. And it's like, I mean, I don't have enough criticism and terrible words for what politics is. I just got to the point. I think it was probably 2014. I was paying attention to, you know, who my local rep was for the first time. And at that point I kind of had this idea that, you know, if somebody's thought of it, especially me, right, then it probably exists on the internet. And so I started looking for a constitutional voting score. And at the time I'd become a constitutional expert. And I was really kind of just gung ho on the Constitution. Obviously I've come a long way since then. I'm an anti-federalist and an anarchist but at the time I started looking and I found this Freedom Index out there that was a constitutional voting record of everybody in Congress, senators and congressmen. And Matt Congressman, man, back at the time was Rob Woodall. And this guy had like a 50 fucking percent, you know, like constitutional voting record, meaning most of the time he didn't really, you know, vote in line with it. And I was like, that's weird for a Republican, right? Like, you know, Article 6, Section 3 of the Constitution is your oath, and your oath is to uphold that. So if you're doing your job 50% of the time, you know, most of us get fired, man. You get let go, cut, you're gone, right? Like, show up half the time or do your job half the time. You're not going to sit around. So, you know, I started looking at it. I started threatening, you know, him in a, you know, not a physical way, but hey, listen, you know, you gotta do better or we're going to run somebody against you. And I got to, I think it was about 2016. And I was like, dude, if I have to, I'm going to primary you. And so I started looking around when 2017 was rolling in and nobody was doing anything. I started rolling into the Republican meetings and all that kind of stuff at the time to see what was going on and introducing myself and, you know, got a lot of notice, you know, coming in, being a vet and, you know, a hometown guy. And boy, I tell you what, at one point I started telling people about Rob Woodall and they're like, really? And I was like, yeah. And I'm going to run. And they, I mean, you would have thought I stepped on a landmine in there because everybody's like, oh no, you don't run against a Republican who's already got the seat. You might as well just go ahead and hand it over. Right. And so, boy, I mean, when you talk about what you were brought up to, you know, understand about Republicans, it is not what is in practice. It is protect the good old boy, damn network at any cost. I don't care if we've got a 50% guy who's in the seat, you protect that guy. And it's a nightmare, man. It's a den of vipers. It's just awful.
Yeah, man. So What made you do the switch from the Republican Party to the Libertarian Party? Was it just how just what you were describing right there? That was just too disgusting and you couldn't handle it?
It was you couldn't do anything. I thought, you know, I was going to use all my bag of tricks, right? You know, psychological operations. I was going to use a whole bunch of, you know, the counterinsurgency techniques that I knew, a whole bunch of the small unit warfare, the force multiplication type assets that, you know, the toolbox of things that I had. I was like, I'm going in here, and don't get me wrong, you know, for a first run on about no money, we made a really sizable impact in that run. And that guy's no longer in office down here anymore because he's found out, you know, and you know, I think that was mostly because of the campaign. But to digress into your question, is like, I saw the shifting and the maneuvering behind the scenes, the outright lying. I mean, I caught it all on camera a lot of times from the chairs. So right down to your county level chair, these people are absolutely in bed all the way up the chain, right? They're all just sitting there vying for power someday. If they're good little Republicans and they do everything the establishment wants them to do, oh man, hey man, this guy's next in line. Maybe, you know, when this guy retires, maybe we should be looking at that guy, right? So they all kind of keep each other in line and do what the power structure wants them to do. And at that point, I was like, this party's lost, man. They are done. Between Michael Heiss and Ryan Graham down here, the Mises Caucus and the chair, they both talked to me and they said, hey, you know, you're a Republican, right? Or a Libertarian, right? And I said, yeah, don't tell anybody. He's like, that shit ain't working over there. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. And so, you know, like that 220 grit sandpaper, they just kind of wore me down. And, you know, at a certain, I guess it was 2019 sometime, they had me come down to the convention and I showed up and somebody nominated me for Senate, and sure as shit, you know, last man standing at the convention, you're tag, you're it. So that was a Libertarian entrance for me, man. It was, and don't get me wrong, it's been, you know, a godsend ever since. I'm glad to be part of it and to see in this moment, you know, that we're standing in the right place at the right time to change history. Like, shit's going to happen in 2022 and 2024. And it doesn't mean, you know, holding an office is a, you know, the win. It's taking, you know, just enough people and saying, we're done with the system, to wake, you know, enough people up to say, okay, you know, you got our attention now, at least.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right. I hope it takes off. I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
You probably had the most interesting race out of everybody. Like, I mean, there were some people who got a ton of votes, but you were involved in the weirdest situation because you were in Georgia with the runoff election. So tell us, how did that even happen? How did the runoff take place? And what was that like going through that?
Well, I got a lot of hate mail. You know, I know where a lot of people stand. And I told everybody, hey, you know, run fucking better candidates and cry more. I don't give a shit either way. But the leading up to it, I knew it was going to be a pretty interesting election. We had Johnny Isaacson, who was a senator down here from the Republican Party, you know, really a terrible Republican as well. But he was getting old. He's got some terminal illness and all that kind of stuff. So he decided to retire. You know, they were pushing him around in a wheelchair. So there was a jungle primary the same year that David Perdue, the current, or the senator that just lost a seat, was up for re-election. And I was like, ooh, this is going to be really interesting. So if I can send this to a runoff as a Libertarian, this is going to make national news, right? Like, this is not only, you know, just going to show up, like, this is going to be a big damn deal if we can carry, you know, in Georgia, it's 50% plus one vote. And on the night of the election, I hadn't spent a damn dime either, right? It was a COVID year. I did everything through my podcast for the most part. Did a couple of stops for Joe Jorgensen out there just to kind of get people, you know, fired up. And then, you know, things kind of just came together. You know, there's a ton of buzz and a ton of interest in people. You know, what resonated was that message. It was like, hey, these lockdowns are draconian and despotic, and they're crushing everybody. It wasn't, you know, left or right or any of that kind of stuff. And hell, most of the time you didn't have to say libertarian. It was just talking about what was in the news cycle as if you were a regular person and not a politician. So we ended up getting about 115,000 votes on zero cents, $0. Zero sense. That's a sound bite. Yeah. And sending this thing to a runoff where, you know, most people, they counted us out. They're like, you're not raising any money. You're not going to have any part of the, hey, guess what? With nothing, we came out, we sent these guys to a runoff. The message of liberty at that point actually started getting covered by the media. And I'll tell you, you know, if you think for a second you're going to run for an office and the media is going to give you any damn attention whatsoever, guess again. Like, that, you are going to be absolutely blackballed in the media. You are going to be left out of polls. That means you're not going to get into debates. So you've got to do something in terms of controlling your narrative. And I think the podcast was kind of that that critical piece that really helped us out. So we sent them into the runoff. And during that time, man, I had the good fortune to have them send Rand Paul in as the guinea pig, right? Because at that point, they're like, hey, who's he going to endorse, you know? And they didn't understand, like, listen, this shit's not for sale. We're not here to play games and pick favorites and the lesser evil. Like, we're here to plant our flag and say we reject both you asshats who are into more war, more debt, more spending, and less freedom. Like, you guys are the duopoly. Get fucked, both of you. So we, you know, that was the message. And Rand Paul came on and embarrassed himself, you know, and I was very, very cordial to him. But you know, I basically just asked him some questions, and when it came time to answer him, he didn't have a bunch of answers, right? And so you kind of see through who Rand is, you see who the GOP was. And at that point, David Perdue, who had talked about coming on the show, I talked to him for an hour off, you know, offline, and he said, yeah, I'll do your show. And then after Rand came on there and got crushed, he was like, nah, I'm not gonna do your show. And I was like, what are you talking about? You're not going to do the show. You got 115,000. You need 15,000 votes. You're not going to throw them like, hey, man, cannabis for sure. I'm going to support cannabis. Like, one issue. I'm not telling you I'm going to give you my endorsement, but I'm telling you, if you want to go out there and win, and guess what? They would rather have it sit between the duopoly than give you any coverage whatsoever. He said, nah, fuck your 115,000 people. Fuck freedom. Fuck peace. All, like, that was his message. And man, it went over like the Hindenburg. Like, people were like, "Nah, yeah, fuck that guy. We're not going to vote for him." Nobody turned out. So, you know, it was pretty glorious all in all. And you know, I'm not a John Ossoff fan by any shot, but still, to see these, you know, rhinos, giant liars. At least the left tells you kind of who they are, right?
Right.
It's like they want socialism and communism, and all the Republicans want to do is, you know, collect a paycheck and be controlled opposition at the end of the day. A bunch of pussies.
Yeah, so there was a ton of pressure from the top on both of these races, right? Like, Trump was pushing for it, and so were the Democrats, because this was, just in case anyone watching was under a rock while this happened, this was the control of the Senate that came down to this race, whether it was going to be Democrats or Republicans. So were you getting, like, hate mail from the establishment on both sides? Like, you better drop out of this, or you better not?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I mean, it was hate mail from everybody. It was hate mail, Democrats, hate mail. And I'm talking, like, both sides equally, all the way from the top, right? Like, I talked to Mike Lee, called me. And he's like, hey, I'm Mike Lee. And he starts going into, like, you know, being from Utah. And I was like, hey, Mike, I know who the fuck you are, right? Like, he's like, right. Hey, I'm going to come down there. What do I need to know? And I was like, don't come down here, dude. I said, you're one of the better people up there in terms of constitutional voting registers. I said, nah, man, you stay your ass home. I won't embarrass you like I embarrassed Rand. So Rand obviously came on the show. David Perdue is calling me for an hour and having conversations. Like, you want to talk about what power is, like, that's what power is. And if you can relinquish it and stay true to your principle, you continue to hold it no matter what. And, you know, like, it was hate mail afterwards. It was people like, drop out of the race. I'm like, I'm not in the race anymore, you dipshit. Like, it's a runoff between your shitty candidates over there. So, yeah, it's a weird thing. Like, you know, like I said, we were talking earlier. It's just, you know, if you can take the abuse from a bunch of people that don't know shit about liberty and peace and all that fun stuff, like, you're probably ready and cut from the same cloth to run.
Yeah. I watched your video with Rand, and as you know, and most people who follow me know, I was a Rand guy in 2016, big time. I was really excited for him. And I mean, watching your video wasn't disappointing, just because I already know that about him. Like, it's obvious in general if you paid attention to him at all. But just watching that video reaffirmed all the disappointments I've had. You know, I just wish he was like his dad. I wish he just didn't care about the party, cared about principles. But if you watch, I highly recommend everyone go watch that video on Shane's channel. It's very revealing. It just shows that, as you said, the Republicans are really there just to maintain control. And what was amazing about that video is he couldn't give you any reason to vote for the Republicans, aside from that it would give him a little bit more leverage in general.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how many different ways did I ask that question? Like, hey man, tell me about David Perdue. Like, right. He's got a 20, as a Republican, he had a 20% constitutional voting record in that year. And people were like, well, the Constitution is dead and all that. It's still a great tool, because that's the tool that they swear an oath to that you can use against these asshats, right? It's like, right. I know we're a post-constitutional republic, but listen, the Republicans who are still out there chanting MAGA and America first and all that kind of stuff, if you're talking rights and all that kind of stuff, man, that's what people want to hear right now. And man, as quote unquote good as Rand is as a Republican, he's still terrible. Like, he's still just terrible at what he's doing. And then I think probably the most fun for me is like, you know, is like, well, where's your endorsement, right? And he's like, oh, it's hard to come across party lines. And like, dude, I don't know about, maybe if question, and I know the guest isn't supposed to question the host, but like, if you see a good guy out there who's running, do you give a shit what party he's in? Like, right. Yeah, he's got my endorsement. Sure, he's awesome. Like, Thomas Massie, great. Good job. Keep going, Thomas.
Yeah. No, you are free to ask questions on this show. I'm not prepared for that type of stuff by any means. Yeah, what I liked about you, too, is, you know, we talked about this a little bit on your show. When I came into the party and I heard radical versus pragmatic, in my mind, that meant like being like Ron Paul versus being like, I should have looked his name up, but the guy from New Hampshire who was worried about the toaster licenses for putting toast in your own damn toaster. Because in my mind, Ron Paul was actually, even though he was radical, he was also pragmatic. Like, he knew which issues to stress at a given time.
Right.
So it's about being radical, but not being an idiot. And you were very good at that. Like, you were definitely radical, but you were talking about, you know, the lockdowns and the wars and the bailouts and police reform, all the stuff that everyone was screaming about all year long. So you are kind of the embodiment of what I wanted the rest of the party to be. Like, you know, being radical doesn't mean being stupid. It means being radical on what matters and what's important. Did you think about that much, or were you just being yourself and that's the way you are anyway? Or
yeah, it's I'm very much, you know, after my first run, you know, for everybody out there that hasn't heard this, like, I ran my own campaign too. Like, it was, I had a guy that I used to work with for my first campaign, and actually before Radical, I was the host of The Rebellion, and me and my partner and former campaign manager, we had a split. You know, he was seeking power, and I was like, I'm not down with that kind of shit. So I was like, dude, I got to be unfiltered. I got to be me. And why not? You know, if Trump gave the world anything, he gave it a test, right? A temperature test. Are they ready for people who are going to come out and rail against the system in a way that is not acceptable for the PC crowd? And the answer was a definite yes. And I was like, well, yeah, let's go. Like, what I started doing was just going, hey, you know what? I'm going to be me. People can hate me, people, whatever, that's fine. At the end of the day, I'm not the person that wants to kill people here or overseas. I don't want guns pointed at people. I don't want people caged and killed, you know, for nonviolent offenses and things like that. So I went out there, man, and just kind of stuck to the news cycle and wink, wink, nudge, nudge, nudge to everybody. It's like, it's not a secret. Like, messaging isn't hard. Messaging is paying attention and being a human being and having the courage to speak what's in your soul and what's in your mind, right? And maybe lead with a just an ounce of humanity instead of all the fucking autism in the Libertarian Party, right? It's like, God damn. Like, I love you guys that are autistic and you guys get all the punctuation right and all of our planks and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? You bore the shit out of the average human being who's not a policy wonk. Stay high level. We're not talking about tweaking policy or bureaucracy. We're talking about ending it completely. Get rid of this piece of shit mafia murder cult organization. Like, that's all it is.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of libertarians are not good at meeting people where they are and then explaining
how smart.
They are. I mean, they've internalized so much philosophy and they've read so many books and they're so into theory that they just kind of lose the audience that they're trying to reach. And a lot of, you know, what I like about you is you know how to talk to people. You know how to reach people. A lot of the more radical people, they have an issue with that. They think that if you're trying to explain something to someone that you're somehow watering down your message. It's like, well, no, you can be principled and you can stand on your message 100%, but you need to explain to people how it's going to work. Because if they just hear you screaming, end the Fed, defund the police, end the wars, and they don't know what any of that means, how we get there, what the repercussions of that'll be, they're going to think you're crazy. But
yeah, it's the Horton Doctrine, right? Like, you outright the right and you outleft the left. And the key to all of that is humanity. I mean, it's what type of human experience do you have that you can share? Because that friction point for most people, and it's where you either get a seed planted or you get a recoil reaction, right? It's that moment. And if you can get a seed planted, most of the time it's done because you've shown people that you're not perfect. Like, you're not holding yourself up as this perfect person, this perfect politician, because right, let's face it, none of us are. And you tell that story about how you had a change of mind, how you were wrong, how you were absolutely indoctrinated by the system. And yep, if you can open yourself up to criticism and be your own worst critic, guess what, man? Like, everybody else at that point, maybe not the person you're talking to, but the people who are in the periphery, you know, looking on, boy, man, that goes a long way. And they at least go, well, at least he's, you know, at least he's human, right? At least he's not one of these pretentious assholes that, you know, isn't willing to admit that, yeah, once in a while mistakes are made and like he was duped and he's gullible and he's human, for God's sakes. And that's the piece that I think that most of the libertarian leadership is missing, because God knows within this Ron Paul Mises type of radical movement that's just really taking over right now, that's what I think, where the whole Ron Paul movement went from 2008 and 2012. They were waiting for people to have a place to all be again, and here we are.
Yeah, I like what you said about humanity. That really is what connects you to somebody. And as you know, I worked for Tulsi, and a lot of that was humanity. Like, the rest of the Democrats were reptiles in 2020. Like, they were just they were so bad. And she was so obviously like a regular person. And I'd say the same thing about Ron Paul. Like, if you go back and watch those debates, you see Giuliani and Mike Huckabee, you know, and I was a ghoul worshiper back in those days. But, you know, looking back at it, it's so obvious who the human on stage is and who the one who's empathetic is and everything. That really does more for people than policy does. Like, if they can relate to you, they care about that more than what you say you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, take that stark difference between Ron Paul, you know, the little old guy who's, you know, a veteran who's standing up there talking about how we are, you know, ruining lives overseas of untold millions of people, right? Like, when he talks about that, and then he talks about, you know, being for the veterans and not wanting to create more of them that come home and blow their heads off, or, you know, have domestic, you know, violence type of relationships, or whatever the terrible, you know, aftermath is. Like, he was reaching out and talking about things when it wasn't popular, for one thing, right? And he was relating to humanity. And I'll tell you what, you know, the veteran crowd responded in a huge way to that. And we're like, yeah, that guy's right. That Santorum dipshit over there, fuck that guy. Right? Like he's still an idiot. Ron Paul is still a badass. And you're just like, yeah, like, how, I don't know. How do people not see that. This is, I don't know. There's a lot of very smart people, and trust me, read your Rothbard, read your Hayek and Mises and all that fun stuff. But at the same time, share your experience. You can get to the books later when you'll know you've shared enough humanity with people when they say, well, man, where do I find more of this stuff? What did you do?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, being a truck driver and doing most of the shows from my truck and swearing on the air and, you know, just kind of showing who I really am, talking about my life, it gives people a lot more to latch onto than any amount of theory I could ever spout off, because most regular people don't care about that. And if you want them to care about the theory, you have to hook them with something. You got to, because that's not going to be the first step for most people. For most people, it's going to be, wow, that one thing you just said really makes a lot of sense. And you know it because you're a truck driver and my uncle's a truck driver and he's said the same thing, you know, just kind of like that. That's how people put that type of stuff together. Yeah. And then you can say, okay, so the reason that is a problem is, you know, you can go into regulations and inflation and central planning and bullshit rules and all that stuff and, you know, break it down that way.
Yeah, it's that common ground, right? Like, oh, you like to fish? Oh, me too, man.
Yeah.
These fucking fishing licenses. I mean, and like, you're there. Like, and that 1 minute, like, you are there. Because I guarantee you, I don't care if it's a left fisherman or a right fisherman. Fishermen hate paying for fucking licenses. I'm not saying harp on it, but you got an in. You know, it's like, right. get your foot in the door. You'll be fine.
Yeah, totally. So you're running for governor in 22 now, is that correct? Or
yeah, sadist, man. I'm just a glutton for punishment. I obviously got to get through the convention down here next year and all that fun stuff. And you know, I'm not going to count my chickens before they hatch. I think we got a good chance of, you know, being the guy that's going to run. Brian Kemp, he's already being challenged from a Democrat turned Republican, Vernon Jones. I don't know if you saw this shit out there today. So Vernon Jones was a Democrat. This guy in his last session as a Democrat down here missed 25% of the votes he was supposed to take as an assemblyman as a Democrat. And I, you know, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning this morning and I was still up, man. And my brain was turning and I saw he put something down like, oh, you know, people are tired of people who govern like Brian Kemp, who talk like, you know, Donald Trump, but are more like Mitt Romney. I was like, didn't you miss 25% of your last votes? And he was like, no, did you miss the brain train? Literally, that was his, you know, his tweet back at me. And I was like, wow. Oh man, I got the fucking receipt. So I went in there and I screenshot everything that he said and all, like, he deletes the tweet. He insults me. I put everything back up there for him. I said, hey, man, basically, I knew you were going to delete this shit. So I took some pictures. Make sure, you know, if you want some copies, let me know. And then he blocks me. Like, this is another governor candidate down here who's running against a really shitty already governor. And you're like, Republicans, are you guys really, is this what you're doing? This is the best you got. You got a tyrant in office and you got a softy who can't take, you know, and here's the thing is the guy could have come out and said, yeah, I did miss that for a family emergency, which he had reported to the paper, but instead he's just there and goes, no. And I'm like, all right, cool, man. Like, if that's your first response is to tell a lie, like, you're done. Like, I am going to have a field day with you guys. And if the Republicans are so stupid, they're going to vote for these guys. Well, have fun with Stacey Abrams, because I guess that's what it's going to be down here.
Man. Yeah. I really like that you just, you flip. I mean, because the Democrats don't cater to us. Like, you know, sometimes we agree with them on some things like criminal justice reform or drug laws or whatever, right, occasionally, but they definitely don't pander to us. You never see Democrats saying, libertarians, come vote for me, like, ever. The Republicans do that all the time. And so it was so great to see you just giving them the finger and saying, like, I loved that interview with Rand Paul, because you were saying, like, I'm not even looking for a libertarian. I just want you to give us something. Like, I want him to say, I'll be against the war in Afghanistan, or I will support ending qualified immunity, or what, just something. Like, give us something to latch onto. We're not asking you to be perfect. If you want our votes, you need to cater to us in more than, you know, in more than speech. Like, we need to see actions. We need to see you.
Yeah. Give me a promise.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, give me something in writing, you know, not that your word means anything, but I mean, literally had an hour long conversation with David Perdue about that kind of stuff and told him, you know, everything from being a combat, you know, vet to say, hey, man, these wars are bullshit. And I asked him, I said, hey, what's the mission? And he couldn't tell me. I was like, if you can't tell me what the mission is, you don't have any business spending another dime, you know, sending these men and women off to death to kill other, you know, peaceful, you know, oh yeah, it made me sick. And I guess I don't need to rehash it, but it absolutely made me sick.
Yeah, man. So when did you decide to start the podcast? How long has that been going?
So originally I got finished with my first run in 2018 for U.S. Congress, the House side. And I was like, you know, I had such a good relationship with my buddy Banks at the time. I said, let's do a podcast. And he finally kind of just was like, yeah, maybe we should. So we did a podcast that ran about 179 shows before the breakup. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, I was up and running again with Radical. So all told, I've probably got, I don't know, I'm in 300 somewhere range right now with total podcasts. So it's been, oh man, 2018, it's already been 3 years of podcasting, you know, two shows a week. And it's, I mean, I love it, man. It's cathartic for me. I get to talk about things. I get to meet amazing people like yourself. I mean, this is what I wish I would have done earlier in life, is just get behind a microphone and start talking about things and having fun and bringing people together. And I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, when I was growing up, there was this guy, Neil Bortz, here in Atlanta, and he was kind of libertarian. He was a hawk, but you know, you hear a bitch about these kind of things and the guy could argue for days, and he was so damn good. At least, you know, even if he was wrong, he was like, he's got some pretty damn good points. And you're like, why don't these assholes ever, you know, get off their comfortable ass duffs and make a run at something? And I'll tell you, you know, that was what I was like, you find me the guy that can host a podcast or a radio show, and he's got some amazing skills in terms of reaching people where they're at, and then he runs for office, I'm going to show you somebody who's going to change some things. And I finally just kind of took my own advice. It was just like, you got to be all of them. You got to do it all, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've had it almost a year. On the 20th of this month, it'll be 1 year since I did my first episode. And I will admit that I've changed, and it's also been a crazy year. So just like,
yeah,
you know, I wasn't an anarchist a year ago. I've only really admitted to the public that I'm an anarchist for like 3 or 4 months. Like I finally just, all the crazy shit that happened this year, I was like, okay, screw it. And I finally stepped through that door. But a year ago, like, I still believed, you know, that we needed a military and we needed police. And I even thought, like, we need, you know, the government should have laws about polluting the rivers and what you're allowed to put in the soil, you know. And so I was more statist than a lot of libertarians when it came to the environment. But from having people on my show and talking to people that I've met, they convinced me that the things I had seen in the workplace that forced you to be more of a polluter when they're supposedly trying to save the environment. Cause I did have empirical experiences that made me think that way. Like, hey, this doesn't make any sense. They just proved to me that it's like that everywhere. It's not just where you work. Like, the EPA is a protection system for corporations so that they can pollute more. They've made it so that much more environmental damage has happened than would have been able to in a free market system. And, you know, I just went down that road and I was like, damn, you're completely right. So I kind of, I have gone from a minarchist to an anarchist inside a year. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, from doing your show, have you met people who have changed your mind on anything and pushed you in a certain direction?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the, and there's a lot of things that I've had my mind change on over the years, right? Like, I was very much a strict constitutionalist for a long time. Like, if we just did this, and I was like, oh, then I found Lysander Spooner, right? And I found some people who could articulate Lysander Spooner. For the audience, if you don't know who Lysander Spooner is, basically the synopsis of one of his greatest, I guess, sentences out there that he's ever contributed to mankind is, the Constitution has either provided for this government or has been helpless basically to stop it, right? And it's not fit to exist. So when I saw that, I was like, well, he's got a damn good point. Probably don't need to be a constitutionalist anymore. And I picked up the Anti-Federalist again. And when I reread the Anti-Federalist, I was like, wow. These guys were prophets, and they talked about the aristocratic accommodation and the bugbears and the hobgoblins, basically, you know, fear mongering from debt to other nations, to the Native Americans, anything and everything that they could, you know, fear monger people into collectivity, right, to centralizing government. And I saw all of this unfolding, and then I came upon Hannah Cox, who was doing some really cool stuff out there with the death penalty. And for a long time, I was, if I ever found somebody that, you know, screwed with my kids or my, like, listen, you're not going to need it. The guy's going to be done anyway. Right. But it's a different thing. You know, it's a different thing when you're, there's a system that catches them. Right. And then you get to the question is like, should the state have execution power? No, the answer is fuck no, not even a little bit. Like, maybe a cage for life and let them think about it, but not the execution power. And I think that was probably one of my later revelations where I came to that spot. But I don't know that I've plateaued as somebody that's working towards liberty. You try to be open-minded. I think that's probably the one thing that I have learned above all else is like, always be a student. You know, don't go into conversations looking to win things. Go into conversations with questions. And if somebody can present you a better damn argument, man, I'm all about putting that in my arsenal. So that's kind of been my later evolution is more now is just like, pour into the books and talk to people and listen to people, because right now, you know, we can study history, but there's a lot of things that are going on now that, you know, just we didn't have the technology back then. We didn't have a whole lot of different parts of, our societal life that we have now. And it's definitely it's worth listening to the nuance come out of different people all over this country and around the world for that matter.
Yeah, I had Kim Iverson, who's kind of a progressive leaning person with a pretty big audience. So she was willing to come on my show, and I didn't even want to argue with her. I just wanted to hear what she had to say. She actually wouldn't let me get through the conversation without arguing with her over healthcare. Like, she wanted to hear what I had to say, so I gave my position. But I had a couple people upset at me that I would have her on and just let her talk, because that's what I do with everyone. I don't cut people off unless I just have a really important question I want to interject with. I just have them on and I let them say what they want, and then I'll say what I want, and you know, maybe we'll have friendly debate or whatever. But someone who disagrees with me is still a person. You know, like we try to use these labels to dehumanize each other, you know, conservative, liberal, progressive, communist, capitalist, you know, like I will talk to anyone. You know, that's what I think that's what's really pissed me off about
the blue pills,
the PC cucks who get upset when Dave has someone on his show, because I would talk to everyone that he's talked to. I'd talk to even more people than that. Like, I don't know, like, having someone on your show does not mean you agree with what they're saying. It means you want to have a conversation. And if you think someone else has abhorrent views, the only way you're ever going to change their mind is by talking with them. I mean, slinging mud at them, calling them fascist and bigots, even if they are, like, you know, you're not going to get through to them that way. Like, you've got to go meet them where they are. So, like, people with the worst ideologies, you know, whether they're communists or fascists or whatever, like, you have some common ground with them somewhere. Like, you might have kids, or like you said, you might be a fisherman or something, you know, like, so talk about that first and try to show them that you're a human, because they have the same, they probably have the same opinion of you that you have of their ideology. You know, like, they've dehumanized you to an extent. I watched your video where it was called Uneducated or whatever. And you started out that conversation by saying, hey, man, let's talk about common ground, because common ground shows us the humanity in each other. I think that's so true.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And that's, that was a brutal conversation. Anybody that got through that, if there's medals to give out for things, you get a great fan award, right? And so, it is. I've gotten to the point where, I don't get a lot of liberals that will take me up on coming in to a show. I've gotten a lot more conservatives, and that's maybe where I'm probably pretty useful, is because I come from that side of the house where I wish liberals were doing the same thing, in our party. Like, obviously we're not all, former neocon conservative types. Right. A lot of what's come in is the Bernie bros and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, where are you having these conversations with your people, or former people, basically, and challenging them on these things? And I don't see it, man. I don't see, I'm not saying it's not there. But this idea that, we don't promise people utopia either. I think that's one of the biggest, I think socialism, communism, if we could just do this, it would be a better, better system. It would be a lot more perfect, and we'd be, on track with, places like Europe. And you're like, guys, you don't want to be like Europe. For the overwhelming majority, you don't want to be like that shit. Like, that's not a good argument. It's like, all right, can we just have more and more conversations outside of, being libertarians? And I think that's, what's going to propel us. And it's going to happen. Like, they can't stop it now. I mean, seeing what happened in Nevada, seeing what's happening in New Hampshire, it's done. The deal is done in a lot of places right now where you've got people who want to go out, they want to unify, and they want to challenge people in all of these different areas and have these conversations. That's what we have to be doing from now on.
Yeah, man, you're 100% right. And it's kind of funny, though. Like, I am actually really good at talking to the left. And I think what it is because I understand how conservatives think, mm-hmm. and leftists don't. They don't get it. So they'll say, like, this is what they think. If it's about abortion, for example.
Yeah.
Like, they'll think, they literally think that conservatives don't want women to have rights. And I'm like, no, that's not how they're thinking. You've got to look at it this way. You don't have to agree with it, but you have to understand where they're coming from. And then I can kind of do that with conservatives for people on the left. Like, they don't understand why someone would think we should legalize heroin. And I'll say, well, it's not because they think heroin's great. They just realize that the war on drugs incarcerates a lot of people unnecessarily. So, like, it was kind of weird, actually, working on Tulsi's campaign for several months. I got to talk to a lot of liberals about free market economics and, basically tell them where Tulsi was wrong on a lot of stuff. But while I was working on our campaign, I was red pilling people on college and how we shouldn't be subsidizing college and how we should get rid of student loans and, how gun control doesn't work. So it was like this great window, because I'm someone who comes from the other side, but they're not scared of me. So they'll talk to me and they'll hear, like, the conservative sides of my views, where there's no way they'd go talk to some guy with a Trump sign in his front yard and say, hey, so what do you think about guns? Of course they wouldn't, but if there's this guy,
just close down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if there's this guy who's approachable, then I can tell them, this is why you're completely wrong about this. I think that's something libertarians have an opportunity to be, but a lot of them choose not to be. They just choose not to be approachable. They want to be, they want to be just as isolated as the Republicans are from the Democrats. It's like, no, you have the opportunity to be the messenger who cannot be polarizing and cannot be, dogmatic. And that's kind of our calling, I think.
Oh, man, if there's something to sell right now, it's not being dogmatic, right? Like, hey, we're not part of any of these cultish type behaviors of the Democrats or the Republicans or their duopoly murder cult. Like, fuck that. You guys see it. You know it's broken. Let me help you. And I'll tell you, man, I got to sit on a panel with six Democrats. This was back when I was running as a Republican. The guy who was Rob Woodall, the guy who was the congressman, he did not show up for this debate. It was me and six of these people up there. And one of the, after it was said and done, I had more Democrats come up to me and be like, man, I wouldn't vote for you, but I at least really respect a lot of where you're coming from and a lot of your opinions, and a lot of them haven't changed since then. But, one of the ones that I found a lot of great, pickup ground on was when they asked me about healthcare, and I got to sit there and say, hey, listen, guys, I understand where your heart's at. I understand that you want people to be taken care of. I understand that the insurance industry and the government have been working together to jack up rates on everything from care to medication to, outlawing certain medication.
Yeah.
But understand this as well. I am part of less than 1% of a demographic in America that has socialized healthcare, and it sucks. It's sad. It's depressing. It's a pill factory where they send, once you go from the asset column for the government into the liability column for the government, and they're in bed with Big Pharma and they need you off of that liability column, here's your fucking pills. Good luck. And at the end of the day, man, it doesn't cost them a damn thing to do that kind of stuff because it's all subsidized printed fiat currency anyway. And they got less veterans who are hostile towards a government that that indoctrinated them and did some terrible shit to them.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, that's showing your humanity, showing that you care about the same things that they do. Because I think a lot of people think of libertarians as completely careless, selfish, narcissistic. And that's not completely wrong. A lot of them are.
We're all very Ayn Randian, if we admit it or not.
Yeah, but I think telling people that you also care about the price of college, and you also care about the cost of healthcare, and you also care about the environment, or whatever it is that they care about, that shows them that you're not the enemy. They're like, oh, this guy just has a different approach than I do. Because if you don't break those boundaries at all, they can always put you in their box and always envision you as that straw man that you're not.
Yeah. And you surprise people, right? Like when you can now remove the stigma of whatever, dogma that is out there. And now they're going to, once you get past that hurdle and they go, huh, I wonder what he'd say about that. That is a great place to be, because at least they're interested in what you're going to say, right? It's like, oh, I might not agree with it, and I might agree with it, but I'm going to have to think. Golly, that's what America needs more is, just stop, shut your face for a second, and digest some things, run some scenarios, and then at the end of the day, have the humility to say, man, maybe I'm not smart enough to crack this problem, right? But maybe there's a guy out there where this is absolutely his passion, right? Like, there's a guy out there who wants to clean streets better than anybody else out there, and he's got a mechanism or a gadget or a widget or all the time or an army of people who are just like him who want to do this kind of stuff for next to nothing or for free or whatever the case is. Like, and you're like, let's let this passion and genius come to the surface and just recognize that there's 7 billion of us, hopefully, after the COVID vaccines and shots and all, like whatever happens in 21, there's 7 billion of us with a gift to give to this world. Let's let these people give their gift to the world, for God's sakes.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, I am really looking forward to your run for governor. I hope you do very well. And I'm just glad to have you as a friend and to know you. And we'll have to keep the conversations going. I'm a big fan. I really like your message. I really like what you're talking about. But I've got your channel and your Twitter page linked in the description. So where else can people follow you, keep up with you, and support you in your run for governor?
Yeah, so I'm probably going to run this if I can, if I don't get thrown in prison or jail or something like that. I'm going to run this completely through my podcast. I don't want people to think I'm bought and paid for. I want to be able to be free of those kind of things. People can go to patreon.com/radicalpod. I'm going to try to fund this entire thing through that movement. I'm going to try to divorce myself from everything else, so this is a full-time gig. And so I need a ton of help. I need everybody, you know, if they've got a bucko five, right? Like throw it in, let's go. And so some of your audience will get the Team America reference. I outside of that, man, I raise hell on Twitter, and it's Shane T. Hazel. And I mean, outside of that, the podcast, you know, if you guys have room for one more Liberty podcast out there, you know, Radical is something I take a lot of passion and a lot of care to create and try to put out some really good stuff for people. So make you think.
Yeah. If you guys already have a podcast, if you watch when you see his intro, you're going to feel a little outgunned. His intro is the best Liberty podcast intro that I've ever seen. So
Danny Smotes, man, I'll hook you guys up, man, because I'll tell you what, I want to see more of his work out there. And Reed, I'd be remiss, man, if I didn't say thank you for giving me a platform here with you. And yeah, man, this friendship and this brotherhood that is forming right now across this country, man, what a thing to be a part of.
Absolutely, man. Well, everyone go follow Shane on Twitter, on YouTube, go check out his podcast. You won't be disappointed. And we will definitely be doing this again. Thank you, Shane.